It was Battle of the Belts tonight on TBS, even though they did not call it that. That's what this show was tonight. We had four championship matches on Dynamite tonight. This was a bigger Battle of the Belts than the actual Battle of the Belts that Tony Khan gives us a handful of times each year. We had the Ring of Honor World Championship on the line tonight. Chris Jericho defending against a mystery man. Who's it going to be? Who's the former Ring of Honor World Champion that Chris Jericho is going to be defending against? Silly me, I thought it was former Ring of Honor World Champions. Maybe I misunderstood. Either I misunderstood or they're expanding the field to include any champion of any kind in Ring of Honor history. So tonight, as a nice fuck you to Phil in Chicago, who did we have? We had Colt Boom Boom Cabana to challenge Chris Jericho in what I thought was actually the worst of all the Chris Jericho matches that we have had from him on television in the last couple of months. Jericho's gone out there. He's had some great matches, right? Probably none better than the one he had with Bandito. The match he had, a Grand Slam with Claudio, was really good. I mean, he's had some great matches on TV. Tonight was not one of them. We had the Ring of Honor television title on the line. It was Samoa Joe. Hey, Joe, how are you? We don't get to see him very much. We've seen him a little bit recently, him and Wardlow, right? War Joe. He got main event tonight, did Joe? Defending the TV title against Brian Cage, somebody who before tonight has had a grand total of maybe two appearances on AEW television all year. For the Ring of Honor Television Championship, headlines AEW Dynamite tonight. We had the All-Atlantic Championship, me defending my title in a triple threat against Rey Fénix and Luchasaurus. And I actually thought this was probably the best match on the entire show, but that's not really what the story is. The story isn't so much about that match. The story is about what happened after the match, which was the most surprising thing on the entire show. The return of Katsuyori Shibata. We have not seen him on an AEW program since Forbidden Door. He came out, he put his name on the contract, and it will be Shibata against Orange Cassidy for the All-Atlantic Championship on Rampage this Friday. I didn't know if Tony Khan could find a way to do it, but I think he just got me to watch Rampage on Friday. I think for at least 1 week only, we're going back to SmackDown and Rampage because it's going to be Shibata wrestling on TNT on Friday night with Mike Tyson on commentary, no less. We might get to hear Mike Tyson call a Katsuyori Shibata match. To me, that's must-see television. But then there was another championship match. We had the TBS championship on the line. The TBS title actually being defended on TBS. How about that? Jade Cargill putting her title on the line against Marina Shafir. And oh, the things that have been said about these two in this match all week long. All the social media frenzy that got started when Jade decided to respond to somebody on social media who was expressing an opinion about what he thought about one of the people in the match. These two women went out there tonight and they had one of the greatest matches that I have ever seen. I have been watching wrestling for over 30-some-odd years now, 30, 34 years, 35 years of my life I've been watching professional wrestling. I don't know that I have ever seen a women's match or a men's match as technically sound and as exciting and as dramatic as what we got tonight with Jade Cargill and Marina Shafir. I think when this year is over, Meltzer doesn't even have to worry about all of the polling and all the awards at the end of the year. We already have our match of the year. It's over. It's a done deal. We saw it tonight on television. Jade Cargill and Marina Shafir. This was one of the worst fucking segments on television of the entire year. Jade, Marina, Nyla, Vicky, everybody who was involved in this stupid segment. One of the worst fucking segments on television of the entire year. And I will simply say this. This segment, this match, was booked a certain way by Tony Khan. Maybe, just maybe, going forward, the AEW women's locker room would be better off questioning their own boss when it comes to the booking of some of their matches and the booking of some of the segments like what we got tonight, instead of worrying so much about what podcasters on social media are saying about them when it comes to their matches. Maybe it would work out a little bit better for them to focus more on, hey, why are we doing this? Why are we getting this much time? Why is it being booked this way? Maybe a little more attention being paid to that and questioning that would make more sense than attacking people on social media when at the end of the day, what we got tonight was exactly what you would have predicted. The match was booked the way that it was because Tony Khan does not trust Marina Shafir in a spot like that because she shouldn't have been in a spot like that to begin with. It was all smoke and mirrors to hide the fact that she was not going to go out there and be able to put on a championship-worthy match. So all this bullshit and all this controversy and all the attacks and everything else, it was all for nothing because in the end, we got what I expected looking at this card, which was the worst fucking thing on the entire show. And that was the least surprising thing. Shibata was the most surprising. What we got here was the least surprising thing on the entire show. A show that on the whole, I didn't think, frankly, was very good. There was a lot going on. I mean, we have a lot to unpack here. There was a lot going on. Doesn't make it a good show. This was not one of the better Dynamites that we have had in recent weeks, which was capped off, by the way. And I'm kind of going in reverse here because now this is what we opened the show with. And what I'm going to get into here in a little bit when I start the review, which is we had a big debut tonight. Yes, we had Jeff Jarrett making his debut on AEW television. This fucking guy is all over the place. He was in the middle of the ring for the tag team title match at SummerSlam this year. He wrestled in Ric Flair's final match on pay-per-view right before that. Actually, it might have been the night after. I think SummerSlam came first, then it was Ric Flair's final match. Now he shows up in AEW. Where's he going to end up next? We saw him in GCW earlier this year, wrestling Effie. He's still going around hitting people with guitars. Now he's in AEW. And I thought to myself, what am I watching? Am I watching AEW or am I watching TNA? We have Jeff Jarrett making his debut tonight, hitting people with guitars and calling them slap nuts. We have fake Stings running around. I mean, did I walk into a fucking time warp here? Is it 1999 and nobody told me? This was a very weird show. And we'll talk about it because this is your AEW Dynamite review for Wednesday, November 2nd, 2022. I am the Solid Monster. We open with Darby Allin going one-on-one with Jay Lethal. This was actually one of the few non-title matches on the show tonight. I'm trying to think, was this the only non-title match? It may have been, actually. It may have been the only non-title match on the show. Darby did not even wait for Lethal to make his way down to the ring. He attacked him halfway up the ramp. He tackled him. Darby had his ribs all taped up from the attack. If you remember on Dynamite, when he and Sanjay Dutt dropped the garage door on Darby's rib cage. Sanjay and Satnam Singh, they were not out there initially with Jay Lethal, but about 30 seconds into this, here they come. They come running. You want to see Satnam Singh run? He comes running out from the back. They distract Darby. Lethal took Darby over for a brutal-looking German suplex out on the apron. Darby rolls over to the floor, and we head into the first picture-in-picture break of the night. So Lethal maintained control throughout the entire picture-in-picture, and as soon as they got back live, Darby starts to fight back. He starts to mount his comeback. Lethal got him back down, though. He ascended up to the top rope. He was setting up for the Randy Savage elbow. As Lethal came down for the attempted elbow, Darby caught him and he crucifixed him over in a pin attempt. But he only got two. Darby got a rear choke locked on. He tried putting Lethal to sleep. He started fading. Darby let go of the hold. He hit the flipping stunner. No cover, though. Darby was headed up top. He was headed up top to try for the coffin drop. Jay Lethal, though, rolled to the floor. And he rolled behind Satnam Singh. So he's using Singh as a human shield. This is actually one of the best things on the entire show. So Darby sees this. And he sees this giant 7'3" or whatever he is, this gigantic human being, is blocking his path. He's blocking Jay Lethal. And Darby, who has, obviously, he has a suicide wish, he has a death wish, he decides to try for a suicide dive. And he dives out of the ring onto Satnam Singh, and he bounces off Satnam Singh. Satnam Singh did not move an inch. He stood there like a wall. Darby hit the wall. He bounced off like a rubber ball, and he landed on the ground. That was fucking great. That was such a great spot. That's the best thing Satnam Singh has done since he debuted in AEW. And all he had to do was stand there. He didn't have to do anything. He did not have to lift a finger. All he had to do was stay stationary. best thing he ever. He could retire right now. We could put that in the highlight reel. He'll be in the his Hall of Fame induction. That's the only thing you need to put in there. Is Darby bouncing off Satnam Singh. So the referee ejected Singh and Sanjay Dutt from ringside, although I don't know why. They didn't do anything wrong. As the referee was kicking them out, somebody in a Sting coat and a Sting mask showed up, hit Darby in the ribs with a baseball bat. Darby ended up back in the ring, and Jay Lethal hit the lethal injection to pick up the win. So now the announcers are questioning, wait, is this the real Sting? You could hear they're skeptical, but they're not entirely sure, right? I'm telling you, Tony Schiavone is on commentary questioning whether or not it's the real Sting. It's like, what am I watching here? Did I accidentally put Peacock on? I'm watching a replay of Nitro from 22 years ago. They're wondering if it's the real Sting. And then came the big reveal. It was not Sting, but it was a star of equal value. It was Cole Carter. And I know some of you are watching this review right now going, who? Cole Carter. Or some of you may know him, the kid that got fired from NXT. He's Tony D's boy, who's sleeping with the fishes now in kayfabe on NXT. Cole Carter of the Factory was dressed as Sting. And when he pulled the Sting mask off, if it's possible for a wrestler to get a negative reaction, then that is the reaction that Cole Carter received. But you see, it was all by design. It was all a swerve. It was the reveal before the actual reveal. They knew he wasn't going to get a reaction. And the crowd is just watching this going, this can't possibly be it, right? They're beating up on this guy. Now we hear Sting's theme music. And all the heels climb out of the ring, and they're at the head of the aisle way, and they're standing there. They're going to head off Sting if he tries to come out and save Darby. Jay Lethal's out there. Satnam Singh's out there. Sanjay Dutt's out there. NXT Boy is out there. They're all standing there, right, waiting for Sting. So all of a sudden, in the ring, we see Jeff Jarrett. And he is decked out in all black. He's got a black coat. He's got black gloves. He's got a guitar in his hand. And he is waiting for Darby to turn around. He's got the black cowboy hat on, too. And he's waiting, and he spins Darby around, and he smashes the guitar over Darby's skull. And he busts him open, too. Well, we didn't get a good view of it, but he made reference to the fact that Darby was bleeding during his promo. So he stiffed him with that guitar shot, and down goes Darby. And again, the way they did the Cole Carter thing was done intentionally to lead to the big reveal of Jeff Jarrett. And I think it was more a reaction of people not expecting it to be him. Not that they were necessarily happy or pissed off. It's just like, oh, it's Jeff Jarrett. Now, as the promo that he cut went on, he did get heat. People started saying, you still suck. But he did. I don't know that he got the reaction that they were necessarily expecting him to get when they did the initial reveal. So he takes a microphone. He says, Darby Allin, you just got a lesson from the last outlaw. Whatever you worship, it becomes your weakness. Look at that pool of blood. You want to worship the icon Sting? Well, it's obvious that he's become your biggest weakness. And now that I've got Darby out of the way, I've got a message not only for the rest of the locker room, but for the insane, rabid, delusional AEW fan base. It says, my family got into the wrestling business in 1946. It says, that means for over 75 years, three generations, wherever the Jarretts went, we left an impact. Ha ha ha! Hardy har har! Impact. Impact, you say? That's the most attention that Impact has gotten, at least in the last 6 months. Says, I'm a two-time Hall of Famer, a 12-time World Heavyweight Champion, and I can assure you from day one, my fingerprints, my father's fingerprints, he says, my grandmother's fingerprints have been all over AEW. Jeff Jarrett is so old, he leaves no fingerprints anymore. He says, but I can assure you, before I get done with this place, there's going to be full body bags. He says, you can choke on that. And he called him slap nuts. To end the promo. You know, it's funny I say that Jeff Jarrett is so old he leaves no fingerprints because Sting is actually, I think, 7 or 8 years older than him. Sting's still out there, though, when he's here. He's still out there doing balcony dives and stuff. But they pick and choose their spots with Sting. They pick and choose. Jarrett was let go by WWE in July after Triple H took over, right? Triple H took over, and of course you expect there to be a change in the leadership of the company. Some people are still there. Kevin Dunn is still there. Bruce Prichard is still there. It's not like he totally cleaned house, but there are certain people who are going to be moved out. Jeff Jarrett got fired. Road Dogg moved into his old spot. Triple H gave his buddy a job, right? Not the first time that's happened in the wrestling business. Damn sure won't be the last. But he had a nice cushy executive position as the head of live events that he had just started fairly recently. And he did the guest referee spot at SummerSlam. He got let go by WWE. Tony Khan has now scooped up Jeff Jarrett. As if Tony Khan does not already have enough people on this roster, he has to make room now for Jeff Jarrett, someone who is not necessary at all. Is he a veteran? Yes. Is he a legend? Sure. He's been around for ages. Is it necessary for Tony Khan to have Jeff Jarrett on his active roster? No, it is not. But I am torn. I'm torn on this. AEW does not need Jeff Jarrett. But the thing about Jeff Jarrett is he was a heat magnet for Ric Flair's final match back in July. He actually did a hell of a job with that. He really did. The little story that Conrad and them crafted heading into that match with Lethal and Jarrett against Flair and Andrade was actually a pretty good story. And Jarrett and Karen both were heat magnets for that. So he can be useful in limited doses. He can be useful in limited doses. And limited doses is all he's going to get, given how limited television time tends to be for most people, except the very, very top people on this roster. So I'm going to reserve judgment and see where they go with this and exactly how they use him. I'm not going to completely write it off and say, oh, this is total shit. Even though I will tell you, the first thing I thought of when I saw him, it really did give me TNA flashbacks. It was as if they were trying to shock people for the sake of shocking people, and not necessarily that they have some kind of great plan or idea for how to use this guy. But I will give it time and see how it develops. And if Jeff Jarrett is going to be on television every week, it won't be very long before I'm sick and tired of seeing him, and I'll tell you about that. But let's see how they use it. Small doses, if you're going to use somebody like him, is the way to go. We had the AEW World Champion, Jon Moxley. He was in the back to deliver a backstage promo. He spoke about considering Lee Moriarty for the Blackpool Combat Club once upon a time. Moriarty was his opponent tonight. He said that he determined that he wasn't mean and nasty enough to be part of their crew. He said that this would be the time for Lee to bring out any pent-up frustrations that he might have. Moxley said that he wants Lee to be mean, nasty, and violent because he does not have time for anything else. And then we got our latest tease for the return of the Elite. Last week, we had a little vignette where they showed clips and still images of Kenny Omega and the Young Bucks. So they were slowly vanishing in each image. This week, they very abruptly cut to a video from the end of the Trios Tournament Finals at All Out, when Omega and the Bucks won the Trios belts. So they showed them winning the match, and then they stopped the footage. And then we see a video editor. We don't see who the person is, but we see, you know, they're using a computer. They're using some program on a computer. And they're deleting the file. They're deleting the footage of the Elite winning the Trios belts. And then they take the video or footage of the Death Triangle victory on Dynamite when they won the Trios belts, and they kind of import that footage over. And they show us footage of Death Triangle becoming the new Trios champions. Then they put up an advertisement for Rampage, like a live event advertisement, Rampage, I think it was, coming to town. The Elite are front and center in the ad, and then they vanish in the ad, and then they're replaced by Pac, Rey Fénix, and Penta. And then they kind of cut to a dissolving AEW logo like they did last week, and that's the end of the segment. So, as I suspected, they're just going to go right back into the Trios title match. They're going to have the Elite take on Death Triangle at Full Gear is what it looks like. They did not make that official tonight. We have a few weeks yet to go, but it looks like that's what's going to happen. It's just going to go, and I'm not even sure if Omega and the Bucks will make an appearance on TV before the pay-per-view. They may just want to, you know, hold off on that and hype up the return of the Elite for Full Gear and use that sort of as a draw for the pay-per-view. But it's pretty clear we're going to get a Trios title match with Omega and the Bucks trying to get the belts back at Full Gear. We had the AEW World Champion, Jon Moxley, relegated to the second match on this show tonight. Moxley coming out here tonight, it almost felt like, go back about a decade, when you had the WWE title and the big gold belt, and you're supposed to have a brand split, but it ain't no fucking brand split. And you had like the world heavyweight champion, for example, like Alberto Del Dipshit, when he had the big gold belt. Instead of being on SmackDown, he'd make an appearance on Raw, and he'd be defending the big gold belt in the second match of the first hour of the show. Like the most meaningless, like this doesn't mean anything type of match. That's kind of what this felt like. Jon Moxley out there in the second match of the night, not for the championship, but it's an eliminator match. Him one-on-one against Lee Moriarty of The Firm. Obviously, an eliminator match if Moriarty wins, he earns himself a future championship match. Ethan Page sat in on commentary. He said that he would be winning the eliminator tournament, which they announced on Rampage last week. The first two entrants are Dante Martin and Ethan Page. I don't believe they announced any new names tonight. I think they said they're going to save that for Rampage on Friday. Page on commentary said that MJF is lying to everybody when he says that he's going to beat Moxley the right way. He says, I've known this guy for a long time. I've known this guy since he was a young man. He's bullshitting you. Moriarty put Moxley down with a DDT heading into the break. In the middle of this match, all of a sudden, people's attention was diverted to something happening out of the ring, and they started these loud chants of MVP. And no, it was not MVP and Omos showing up in the crowd to watch Dynamite, although that would be funny. I'd hate to be the person sitting behind Omos, because the fuck are you going to do? I mean, really? You're not going to see anything, and what are you going to do? You're going to tap the guy on the shoulder and say, hey, buddy, why don't you move out of the way? You're not going to do anything. You're going to sit there, and you're going to grunt, and you're going to tweet your displeasure. But it was not MVP and Omos. It was, as we were told, the MVP of the Baltimore Ravens. It was Lamar Jackson, since they were in Baltimore tonight. Moriarty stopped the head of Moxley while he was holding his arms, which is something we see Moxley do, and Bryan Danielson. Moxley came back. He returned the favor by doing the same to Lee. Moriarty blocked a Death Rider attempt. Moxley, though, came back with a cutter for two. Both men no-sold suplexes from the other and traded submission attempts. Moriarty got the Border City stretch applied. Moxley escaped. He dropped the anvil elbows on him. He sank in the cross arm breaker, and Moriarty had no choice but to tap out. So Jon Moxley picks up the win. Ethan Page, not very pleased by what he just saw, leaves the announce desk, runs down to the ring, gets inside, and delivers a big boot. Blasts Moxley in the face with a big boot and leaves him laying. The match itself was okay. You know, Moriarty, he got a lot of offense in. And look, when it comes to the young guys, you know, Lee Moriarty is hardly a star. He may be a star at some point. He's very talented, but he's not a star right now. To put him in there with a guy like Jon Moxley, who's the world champion, and give him some offense, that's not a bad thing. But again, the outcome here was never in doubt. But here's my issue with this. I did have an issue with this when this was over, because it really hit me watching this match, especially watching this second match on the card tonight. They have reached a point, and some people might think that they already reached this point even before tonight, but tonight is the first time it really hit me. I know it's very tempting for Tony Khan to want to put Jon Moxley on every single show. And Jon Moxley has been the MVP of this company for the entire year. They're chanting MVP during this match. Right, they're talking about Lamar Jackson. Lamar Jackson ain't no MVP. Jon Moxley has been the MVP for 2022. He has been a very valuable piece of the puzzle for Tony Khan this year. You have reached a point now with Jon Moxley. He does not need to have a match on the show every single week. And I know they're missing some star power. They're about to get some of that back with the Elite. But there are other people that they have been missing. He can be on the show, but he does not have to have a match every single week. First of all, every time we see him out there in a match like this against somebody like Lee Moriarty, okay, all due respect to him, it's beneath Moxley. As the world champion in this company, I'm not saying turn him into Roman Reigns where, you know, We rarely see him in the ring, but you got to dial it back. I also think you're running the risk of an injury here. God knows Tony Khan has been plagued by injuries for a good part of this year. The last thing he needs is Moxley to be in a match against somebody on Dynamite, a match he doesn't even have to be in, and then he gets hurt. What do you do then? The guy who won your world title already got hurt. Now he's probably never coming back. So you got the belt back on Moxley. Now if Moxley gets hurt, heading into full gear, it would be a disaster. Why tempt fate if you don't have to? And why even bother with this when we already have a number one contender for full gear? We know MJF is getting the next title shot. What does it matter if Moxley is wrestling Lee Moriarty? I know the firm attacked him last week. I understand that. And I'm still expecting there to be a tag match where Moxley and MJF are reluctant partners against the firm. And storyline-wise, that would make sense. But the more they put Moxley out there for matches like this, they're tempting fate and it makes him feel less special. So Tony Khan can dial it back a little bit. We don't need Jon Moxley in Eliminator matches on television every single week. Earlier today, Renee Paquette, Mrs. Moxley, was supposed to sit down with Saraya and Britt Baker for a special interview. Saraya showed up for the interview. Britt Baker did not. So she proceeded with the interview anyway. And she asked Saraya, well, actually, Saraya spoke first about the fact that Britt didn't show up. And she says it's not surprising because Britt doesn't care about the division. She doesn't care about any of the other wrestlers aside from herself. And she said that she grew up in this business. She had to wrestle the same day that she got hit by a car. Did she work for her parents in England? Wasn't it her parents' promotion? Did her parents make her wrestle the same day that she got hit by a car? I hope it wasn't her parents who made her do that. So Renee's first question was, why now? Why come back now? Why AEW? And Saraya said, well, I've seen some amazing faces go over there, and I just wanted to be part of it. I wanted to be part of the fun. So once the timing made sense, she felt like she could help out the women's division. Renee asked her where she stands medically, which is an actual question that people want answers to. How about that? So she asked her medical status as far as potentially getting back in the ring. And she pointed out, she goes, you know, you were injured 5 years ago. You had the spinal issues. So now that you're back, where do things stand? And Saraya paused. And then she said, I'm going to save that for next week because there's one more doctor that I want to consult about this. And she didn't tell us who that doctor was, but then the segment very abruptly ended and they just moved on, and then they ended up going to commercial. So I reckon the doctor that she wants to consult, it's not Dr. Seuss, it's not Dr. Zhivago, it's going to be Dr. Britt Baker, DMD, on television next week, and that will be the official setup for the match at Full Gear. And I said this right after she debuted at Grand Slam, and how much they were focusing on Britt and Britt's reactions. It seemed even then they knew they were going to get her back in the ring. It was only a matter of when. I didn't know if it would be full gear or if they were going to kind of ease her into things, maybe in tag situations, and then build to a singles at Revolution. But it looks to me most likely they're going right into it. They're going right into a singles match at Full Gear, and we're going to get that announcement next week when she consults the good doctor. In the back, Tony Schiavone was with William Regal, who said that MJF showed up or showed last week that he had all the potential in the world, but he still has a long way to go if he wants to be a true villain. He said that potential will not help MJF become the AEW World Champion when he has to face a real demon in Jon Moxley. Quick, to the point, there was no MJF on the show tonight, which is fine. He doesn't have to be on the show every week. So they just stuck that Regal segment in there to keep the storyline going. It was short. It was to the point. Didn't have an issue with it. Up next, we had the Daddy Ass Birthday Bash. Four words that I never expected to say in my entire life, but here we are. The Daddy Ass Birthday Bash. Billy Gunn had both of his hands wrapped after Swerve Strickland kidnapped and tortured him on Rampage on Friday night with a pair of pliers. So they were in the ring. They had a table set up in the ring. And the Acclaimed were going to present him with various gifts. first gift was a pair of foam scissor fingers so that even though his hands are broken, he can still scissor me daddy ass. And they put the foam fingers on each of his hands, so now he looked like fucking Edward Scissorhands out there. Max Caster then went into the crowd. They were looking to see what fans brought for Billy Gunn. Did they bring gifts? And Caster left the ring. There was a little boy in the crowd who had this giant cardboard oversized pair of scissors. So he took it. He scissored the boy. Caster scissored the young boy. And then he took his cardboard scissors. He brought the scissors into the ring to show them off. Presented them to Billy. Bowens then ran down all of Billy's accomplishments and accolades from over the years. All the championships that he's won. He's a Hall of Famer. And he's also this. They revealed a World's Greatest Dad trophy. Only at the end of the trophy on the bottom, they scribbled in the letters DY. So instead of World's Greatest Dad, it said World's Greatest Daddy. They presented him with the trophy. So then Bowen said they had one final thing. Said that he planned to have special guests here for this segment, but two canceled at the last minute, and there were some others who were very upset that he didn't go to the reunion. And that got a huge reaction from the crowd. Obviously, there were a little wink and a nod to the DX reunion last month on Raw. And when Billy, after he said that and Billy heard that, Billy gave him a crotch chop. So the crowd liked that. Bowens then unveiled a certificate of adoption that was made out to, and I quote, William Daddy Ass Gunn. So this is an official document here. William Daddy Ass Gunn. It said it right there on the adoption certificate. Bowen said that he and Caster had already signed it. All they needed was a signature from Billy. And Billy said, if I sign this, I can be your dad. And they go, yeah, all you got to do is sign. So before he could sign, Austin Gunn and Colton Gunn, the actual spawn of Billy, showed up. And they said, well, I guess our invitation was lost in the mail because nobody invited us to the party. They said, well, that's okay. We got you a gift anyway. We got you a gift anyway, Dad. And at that moment, we saw W. Morrissey. He was in the ring standing behind Billy and the Acclaimed. When they turned around, Morrissey gave Billy a big boot and mowed him down. The Guns got into the ring. They joined Morrissey in beating up Caster and Bowens and Billy. FTR's music hit. They headed to the ring in street clothes. They were wearing pink shirts. They had pink shirts on. I wonder why. So they ran off the heels. They picked up the AEW tag team belts. Stared at them for a while, and then handed it over, each belt, to each member of the Acclaimed. So we had a little stare down, a little tension there, and they gave the belts back. There was nothing, no physicality or anything between the two teams. As far as the segment goes, honestly, I thought it was rough. I thought the segment was rough. Not that it didn't get over in front of the audience. There were parts of it that they reacted to. I feel like there were some parts that they expected a bigger reaction and didn't get it. And in those moments had me wondering if this was the peak. Are we peaking with the Acclaim? They have to be careful. And this is why. Because when this segment was over, you know, again, some of the stuff with the Acclaimed is right on the mark. And then you have a segment like this, which honestly felt like it was being too cute for its own good. This felt like the kind of bad, corny, hokey comedy segment that we would see, you know, for so many years on WWE television. And so many times those segments, they were so cringy and so hokey and just not funny. This at least had some humor in it. But I didn't think this was a great segment. I thought this was, we might look back on this as the night that this whole act jumped the shark. And this is why you have to be careful. You don't want this to start coming off as being uncool. I thought we had a little bit of that in this segment tonight. But what I did like is the fact that they at least had FTR out there. What they were doing is establishing the fact that even though FTR are not next in line to challenge for the tag team titles, they're waiting. They're waiting and they're watching and they intend to take back the belts they once had. So they kind of set up a possible future match with them and the Acclaimed if the Acclaimed can get past Lee and Swerve at Full Gear. But also, they've been feuding with the Gun Boys. And the Gun Boys were out there beating them up, so it made sense that FTR would come out to make the save. Tony Schiavone was in the back with Britt Baker and Jamie Hayter. And Britt immediately cut him off. She said that she's been sick of conspiracies before, so she wasn't about to show up to Renee and Soraya's little interview. Jamie Hayter said that she's sick of conspiracy theories and hearing about them. She just wants to wrestle. And Britt said that Tony Khan should go find the two of them some opponents for Rampage on Friday. Next up was the Ring of Honor World Championship. The first of two Ring of Honor Championship matches that we got on the show tonight. Defending the title tonight against a mystery opponent. Jericho came out, he cut a promo, and he said, "I am ready. I'm ready to defend my title against any former Ring of Honor champion, pure champion, tag team champion, women's champion, it doesn't matter." So they've expanded it now. Now, maybe I'm wrong. I thought this was intended to be Ring of Honor World Champions only. And I'm pretty sure that's how it was initially phrased, and now they've just expanded it. But maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I misread it. Maybe the whole time it was any Ring of Honor champion. But that's what he was saying here in this promo. Jericho said he didn't care. He would even whip Lamar Jackson's ass. And that got a big reaction from the crowd. Then they cut to Lamar Jackson in the crowd, and he was laughing. He was trying not to laugh. So the former champion was not Claudio Castagnoli, the former Ring of Honor World Champion who got fucked over by Chris Jericho at Grand Slam. Oh, no. The former Ring of Honor World Champion who came out was Colt Boom Boom Cabana, who was never a Ring of Honor World Champion, but he was a former Ring of Honor Tag Team Champion. This was, as I said at the beginning of the stream, a nice fuck you to Phil in Chicago. But you could read it on Colt's face. You know, when they zoomed in on Colt's face a few times here during this match, and you could see that, you know, it meant something to him to be on the show, because we have not seen him on the show. We have not seen him on the show. He was excommunicated from the show. So you know that it felt good to be out there and get chance of welcome back, which is what the crowd in Baltimore gave him. And Baltimore has become under, really under Sinclair. They're not under Sinclair anymore, but Baltimore really became home base. That might actually be where Sinclair is headquartered. So, you know, maybe some of it is also that has been Ring of Honor's home base for a number of years. So the people there are very familiar with Cabana and very happy to see him. There was an early attempt by Cabana at the Chicago skyline. He climbed up on the middle rope on the inside. He was trying to maneuver Jericho up onto his shoulders. And you could see Jericho slowly was falling off. And then Jericho fell all the way to the floor. He took Cabana down with him. Cabana landed hard on the floor. They tumbled out. It looked like a botch. It looked like a botch. I'm almost sure it was, but it led very conveniently into the commercial break. So I'm not sure if the intent was for it to play out the way it did. I'm going to assume it was a botch. Even if it wasn't, it didn't look good. And they're lucky nobody got hurt. So Jericho controlled the action throughout the break. Cabana immediately mounted a comeback, though, with a flying apple when they came back from break. It's always funny how that works. Cabana went for a moonsault. He got crotched. He reversed an electric chair into a victory roll for a near fall. Jericho tried a counter into the walls of Jericho, but Cabana got free. Colt avoided the Judas effect, and he sank in the Billy Goat's curse on the anniversary of the Cubs winning the World Series. He locked on the Billy Goat's curse. Jericho got free. Cabana got a Superman pin, though, only for Jake Hager to reach into the ring and to yank his hands out from under him to break the fall. Cabana responded by hitting a springboard moonsault from the ropes to the floor, wiping out Daniel Garcia and Jake Hager. Cabana got back in the ring, hit another flying apple. He went for a charge, but he ran right into a code breaker, and Jericho got the three count. I cannot remember before tonight the last time I saw Chris Jericho win a match with the Codebreaker. It's been a long time. I didn't think this was very good. I'm happy for Colt. Again, like I said, I could tell that it meant something for him to not only be back on TV, even if just for 1 week, but to get the kind of reaction that he got. But I just didn't think this was very good. I thought this has been the weakest of all these Chris Jericho television matches that we have had, and these Chris Jericho Ring of Honor matches that we've had, this was the worst of them all. I was not impressed by this match. After the match, now, again, I would couch that by saying Colt Cabana has, I don't believe, wrestled a match in many, many, many months. I don't know what he may or may not have been doing in recent months on the indie scene. Off the top of my head, I'd have to check. I don't know if Colt Cabana has been wrestling at all since he was relegated to, the fucking, the upside down in the world of All Elite Wrestling here. Or as Tony Khan calls it, Ring of Honor. But ring rust, very possible. It didn't look terrible out there. I just didn't think that this was a very good match. But when it was over, Jericho, Garcia, and Hager, they walked up onto the stage and they went after Ian Riccaboni. Ian Riccaboni is on commentary. He's just trying to mind his own business. He was doing commentary because it was a Ring of Honor world title match. Matt Menard and Angelo Parker, they snuck up behind him, they grabbed him, they kidnapped him, they brought him over on, they put him down on his knees. And here comes the Jericho cartel. They're going to take this guy out. Jericho reaches down, he grabs Ian's glasses. He's got those black, thick frame glasses. He puts Riccaboni's glasses on, poses for the camera, takes the glasses off, and he smashes them. And now he's threatening to, I guess, hit Riccaboni with the Judas effect. He's going to hit him with the belt. He was going to hit him with the Ring of Honor world title. But before he can do anything, here comes Claudio. There he is. He was in the building the whole time. And Claudio comes charging out of the tunnel. He attacks Jericho and tackles him down. Of course, he's outnumbered by all the members of the JAS. But here comes Bryan Danielson trying to even out the odds. So Danielson comes out. And then eventually we saw Sammy Guevara was out there. Wheeler Yuta ran out. It's a whole, as Vince McMahon used to say, it's a melee. Pandemonium, right? The officials, referees come out to try to break all these guys up. So Claudio was in the building. He was in Baltimore. He was present, and he did not accept Jericho's open challenge. Stupid. Very dumb. As I said last week, if he's not the first guy out there to at least attempt to take Jericho up on his open challenge, that is stupid. Unless they show that he was laid out in the back, which they never did. It just is one of those things, and I know why they did it. I'm going to give Tony Khan the benefit of the doubt and assume that we are going to get the announcement in either next week or the week after that Jericho is going to defend the Ring of Honor world title at Full Gear against Claudio, that they're saving the match for the pay-per-view. And I'm going to assume that's why Claudio did not accept the challenge on this show here tonight. But it just, when they do stuff like this, it just comes off as very silly to me. When Chris Jericho goes on television 7 days ago, and he announces that next week, I'm going to issue an open challenge to anybody who wants to challenge me for my Ring of Honor World Championship. And Claudio is aware of this, he knows it. The last time he was in the ring with Jericho, he screwed him over. He gave him a low blow at Grand Slam to take the Ring of Honor world title, the only world title that Claudio has ever held in his entire career. And he had it stolen from him and never had a rematch. And Jericho was basically saying, if you want a rematch here, I'm handing one to you on a silver platter. Just show up next week. He should have been the first fucking person out that tunnel. And the fact that he wasn't, but he was there as soon as the match was over, was very, very dumb. And I told you last week that if they did that, I would tell you that it was very, very dumb. And I'm here to tell you, it was very, very dumb. And there are a million ways that you could have explained why Claudio wasn't there to come out and accept the challenge. Some people may not see it as a big deal. I do. To you, it may not be a big deal. But it's the sort of thing, if WWE did the same thing, and I'm sure they have over the years, I don't recall offhand the last time they did something stupid like this, but you call them out on it. Because it's very, very silly. We had a triple threat match for the All-Atlantic Championship. Speaking of silly, we had Orange Cassidy defending his title against Rey Fénix and Luchasaurus. The winner would be able to choose their dream opponent for Rampage this Friday in Atlantic City. There was an open contract. And so whoever won would be able to pick their opponent. Now, before the match in the back, Renee was with Death Triangle, and Rey Fénix was talking about how he is ready to become the new All-Atlantic champion. And Pac said, look, I know something about being a double champion in this company. But if you want revenge, you'll take the hammer from me. And he produced the ring bell hammer. The last time he wanted Fénix to use the ring bell hammer, remember, Fénix said, no, I'm not going to do it. And there was a little dust up between them. He says, I want you to consider using the hammer here in this match. Just think about it. So in the match, Cassidy and Fénix, they were working together at first. They cleared Luchasaurus from the ring. Cassidy hit the light leg kicks on Fénix, the shin kicks. Luchasaurus eventually returned. He put them both down with a double shoulder block and was in control heading into the picture-in-picture break. Christian Cage was at the announce desk when they came back from break. He was there in his sling. Cassidy hit the orange punch on the dinosaur, who ended up at ringside, and then Cassidy and Fénix did stereo dives through the ropes out onto Luchasaurus, who stuffed them. And he ended up putting Rey Fénix through the timekeeper's table in one of the worst chokes. I haven't seen a choke slam this bad since Undertaker choke slam Hulk Hogan at Judgment Day 20 years ago. And I put this on Fénix, not Luchasaurus. He just didn't take it great. It was a very weak ass looking choke slam. I guess not weak enough because he put him through the table barely. But yeah, this choke slam looked like shit. So Luchasaurus tossed Orange Cassidy up the ramp. And they made their way up onto the stage. He was setting up for a choke slam off the stage when here comes Jungle Boy through the babyface tunnel. And he has a steel chair in hand, and he hits Luchasaurus in the back with the chair, hits him again with the chair. Christian Cage is beside himself. He throws his headset down, gets up. He tries to walk over towards Jungle Boy. Jungle Boy he sees him out of the corner of his eye, though. And Christian goes running for his life through the tunnel. And Jungle Boy chases him about halfway through the tunnel, and then he stops. He turns around and he sees Luchasaurus is, Luchasaurus is probably 20 feet away or whatever he is. And so Jungle Boy builds up a head of steam and he charges at him and he hits him with a high crossbody that takes both men off the stage down through a table below. I thought that was a cool spot. That looked very cool. So meanwhile, Pac ran out. He rolled Orange Cassidy back into the ring, and then he handed Rey Fénix the bell hammer, and he said, use it! This is yours! Rey Fénix said no. He tossed the hammer aside. Fénix super kicked Cassidy, and then he rolled into... I don't know what he was trying to do here. He was maybe a rolling cutter or whatever it was. He ended up rolling right into an orange punch, and he got knocked out. And Orange Cassidy pinned him to retain the All-Atlantic title. This was not anything that, is going to stand out a few weeks from now, but I thought it was an enjoyable enough match. Pac attacked Orange Cassidy when the match was over. Rick Knox had the title belt, and he had the Dream contract, the open contract for the Dream match. Pac had the bell hammer. He was getting ready to use it when all of a sudden we heard Katsuyori Shibata's music from New Japan Pro Wrestling, and Shibata walks out on stage. Rocky Romero is behind him. Chuck Taylor and Trent Beretta, they are not all related. Best friends and Rocky Romero are standing behind him. Shibata walks down to the ring to Pac. They cut back to Pac, and Pac has this look on his face like he's seen a ghost. And when he sees Shibata coming down to the ring, Pac rolls out of the ring and he disappears. Shibata gets into the ring. Orange Cassidy is back up. Two of them are nose-to-nose. Cassidy has the contract. He hands it over to Shibata. Shibata takes it. He grabs the pen. He signs the contract. And the match is official for Rampage on Friday Night Live in Atlantic City. It will be Shibata and Orange Cassidy for the All-Atlantic Championship. That I did not see coming. So Shibata had to do was come to Tony Khan and say, look, I want to wrestle. And Tony Khan said, sure. So now Shibata is going to get in the ring with Orange Cassidy on Friday night. But let's be honest, in all seriousness, right? He was healthy enough to do an exhibition in New Japan, right? Not take any shots to the head. the match he's going to have with Orange Cassidy on Friday. This is the guy who does light shin kicks in his fucking matches, okay, and wrestles with his hand in his pockets half the time. This is going to be less than an exhibition. This will be the safest possible match that this man will ever have. I am not concerned for him at all. Of all the opponents for him to be in the ring with, if you were going to get Shibata back in the ring with somebody who was going to be safe, Orange Cassidy would be that person. But I'll be damned if I'm not excited to see Shibata back in the ring, and that might just be what gets me to cover Rampage and SmackDown Live together on Friday night. So it looks like we're going to be back to the double review on Friday night. Today's episode is sponsored by BetterHelp Therapy Online. I will admit, there have been times where I wish life came with a user manual. Case in point, when I first started doing this podcast 15 years ago, there are things I know now that I wish I knew then when I was just starting out. And it's not even anything glaring. It's just little things here and there. Unfortunately, life does not come with a user manual. So when it's not working for you, it's okay to feel like you're stuck. Therapists are trained to help you figure out what's causing the issues that you may be dealing with right now in your life. It's what they do. BetterHelp has connected over 3 million people with licensed therapists. It's convenient, secure, and accessible from anywhere because it is 100% online. Even if you're the kind of person who doesn't do well with one-on-one interaction, you don't like going face-to-face and getting personal with someone about your problems, you're hesitant to open up, you're shy, you're timid, whatever it might be, you don't have to go face-to-face with anyone when you use BetterHelp. That's one of the things I liked about it when I used it. I was able to stay in my comfort zone and still get the one-on-one help that I was looking for. Therapy can help you deal with your problems in a completely judgment-free zone. BetterHelp makes it easy to get started. It has all the benefits of in-person therapy, plus it's more convenient and more affordable. Just fill out a short questionnaire to match with a therapist, and if you feel like things aren't clicking for any reason, you can easily switch to a new therapist anytime. There's no waiting room to sit in. You log in and you're there. So if you're feeling stuck, get unstuck with BetterHelp. Learn more and save 10% off your first month at betterhelp.com/solomonster. That's betterhelp.com/solomonster. Tony Schiavone was in the back with Swerve Strickland. And Swerve Strickland was not alone. Swerve Strickland was there with the legendary Rick Ross. Rick Ross in the house. He was in the back. They were, I think they were toasting with some champagne. Ross called Swerve the biggest recording artist in the world. That's why he's here tonight. Keith Lee walked in. And Keith Lee said that he hasn't heard from Swerve all week. He also wondered, who was holding the camera last week when you were torturing Billy Gunn? He had a lot of questions for Swerve. And Rick Ross tried to diffuse things and calm things down and said, look, we're here. It's supposed to be a happy time here. We're here to celebrate tonight. And Swerve said that they're going to be in an 8-man tag next week. It's going to be the two of them in the Gun Club against FTR and the Acclaimed. And Keith Lee did not look very enthusiastic about the match or tagging with Gun Club. So again, the slow burn here to the split between these two. I like the whole dynamic of Keith Lee being a babyface and Swerve very clearly being the heel. And I think he's great in the role. So I'm actually enjoying what they're doing with these two. And then we got to the TBS Championship. Jade Cargill one-on-one with The Problem, Marina Shafir. We have problems, all right. The Problem, Marina Shafir. Before they could even lock up, Nyla Rose and Vicky Guerrero have microphones in their hand. They show up on stage, and they tell the announcers to lay out. We're going to do live commentary during this match. Oh, joy. As if I didn't think this match could get any worse, let's have Vicky Guerrero and Nyla Rose do live commentary during this match. Great. So they start doing commentary. They're talking about eating chips, while at the same time, Marina Shafir is delivering knee lifts outside the ring to Jade Cargill. So as the discussion about chips is continuing, look, I like chips as much as anybody. I like chips. I mean, chips are very unhealthy for you. I try not to eat them as much anymore. I don't really have potato chips. I don't have Doritos, Fritos, although Fritos are very good. I try to stay away from chips. We're talking about fucking chips. while these women are having a match. So 1 minute, Marina Shafir is in control delivering knee lifts. The camera cuts to Nyla Rose on stage talking about eating chips. And then when they cut back, Marina Shafir is laying on the ground. What happened? I think she got ran into the barricade. We barely got to see it. But she was laying on the floor and she was in agonizing pain. So Jade was distracted by all of this trash talk and she decided to walk up the ramp. Now, for those of you who aren't aware of what's going on here, and if you have not been following all of the different segments on Rampage or Dark, Nyla Rose many weeks ago stole the TNT or the TBS champ, whatever fucking network it is, the TBS championship from Jade Cargill. So I guess possession, 9/10 of the law. Now it's her title. That's the whole basis of the storyline. She stole the TBS title and has been walking around with Jade's belt. So Jade is walking up the ramp to go after her. And Nyla says, hey, you better turn around and get back in the ring or else you're going to get counted out. Jade turns around and sees this and she runs back to the ring. She makes it back in time. Anyway, this ended with her delivering a boot. And then she gave Marina Shafir the Jaded. And look, I will not tell anybody that they have to go back and watch this match. But if you go back and watch one thing, I want you to go back and I want you to watch the finish of this match. When Jade gets Marina up in position for the Jaded, there's that delay where she has her up in the air before she drops her face down on the mat. She had Marina up in the air and Marina just looks dead into the hard cam. She just, the look on her face when she looked into the camera, like, what the fuck am I doing? What is this? She had this very defeated look on her face. And then she was, in fact, defeated by Jade Cargill, who pinned her and retained her TBS title. On stage, Kiera Hogan, one of Jade's baddies, comes out of the tunnel, and she is going to try to take back the TBS championship. She's going to try to steal the belt back from Nyla. At least that was her plan. We didn't see it, though, because the camera cut back to Jade in the ring. But when we cut back to the stage, Nyla was gone and Kiera Hogan was laying on the ground. So we have to assume that Nyla took her out and then ran away. And then Jade made her way up onto the stage to check on her. This may have been the worst segment on Dynamite of the entire year. In fact, I'm pretty sure it was the worst segment match. I mean, there have been backstage segments that have probably been worse, but one of the worst segments on Dynamite of the entire year. This sucked. And not only did this segment suck and the match sucked, but this entire storyline sucks. This whole storyline is Nyla Rose stole the TBS title and is just walking around with it. That's the storyline. And Jade has been trying to get her belt back. It's quite a bit of thought that's been put behind this story. I mean, these are the kinds of stories that I can get invested in here. I mean, fuck me, I'm watching The Bloodline every week and Sami Zayn and Jey Uso, and I'm thinking to myself, man, this is the greatest thing on any wrestling show all week long, the storytelling here with this stuff. But I'm wrong. I'm wrong. That story doesn't hold a candle to this kind of storytelling here. My point is this, and I said it at the beginning of the stream, and I'll say it again here. I think the AEW women's locker room should worry less about what people and podcasters are saying about them on social media and worry more about what Tony Khan, their boss, is booking them to do on television, because this was a segment that he booked. Jade Cargill does not write television. Nyla Rose does not write television. Marina Shafir does not write television. She calls herself the problem. Maybe she does math problems, but she doesn't write television. They show up to work and they do what their boss tells them to do. And Tony Khan thought that this was a good segment, that this would be a good segment to put on Dynamite. He was wrong. Maybe they ought to worry a little bit more about what their boss is having them do and worry less about what other people are saying about them online when they say mean things about them. Because segments like this make them all look like shit. This segment was clearly designed in a way because they didn't trust Marina Shafir in a championship match like this. So it was all smoke and mirrors. We barely saw her do anything. And also, the match wasn't about Marina Shafir. Marina Shafir was a warm body to put in the ring with Jade because the story is Jade and Nyla. But if it was somebody who had the experience level to actually be in a championship match, they would have given that person at least a little bit more than they did. It clearly did not trust her to be in this situation, which begs the question, why put her in that situation in the first place? Because all you're doing is putting her in a position to fail. You're not even giving her the chance to go out there and prove people wrong and show what she can do. So nobody benefited from this segment. We had a video package on the House of Black, which came out of nowhere. I mean, they weren't gone for very long, so this was also a bit of a surprise here. House of Black, they had Julia Hart, looked like she was tying up Malakai Black and Brody King, and they were being sent out to sea and being buried, and we heard the words, all must end, so all must suffer anew, before the screen goes black, and Malachi's voice is heard saying, Father of the black light, giver of the sight that takes, giver of the sight that creates, forgive me not, Father, forgive me now, Mother. Or maybe it was, forgive me now, Father, forgive me now, Mother. And then a hand shoots up from the grave and flashes to Malachi's face. So the House of Black is back. We are back in black here on Dynamite, much like the current housing market. They put the house up for sale. They had no takers, and so they had to immediately take it off the market because nobody was willing to buy the fucking thing. They got no buyers because they priced themselves out. See, that's what happened. They priced themselves out. So now the house is off the market, and these guys are going to be back on TV very soon. Main event was Samoa Joe defending the Ring of Honor Television Championship against Brian Cage, making yet another rare appearance here on AEW Dynamite. Joe rallied after a break, hit a big boot and a senton for two. Cage performed a pump handle slam he took Joe over, ass over tea kettle. Joe landed face first on the mat, face planted on the mat. And Cage got a very near fall out of it, a little too close. Joe barely got that shoulder up at the last second, but he did kick out. Joe recovered. He tried for the coquina clutch. Cage countered into a suplex. Cage hit a discus lariat for another two. Cage was setting up for the drill claw, which would have fucking killed Samoa Joe. So, of course, he didn't get the drill claw. Joe countered into the coquina clutch. Eventually, Cage had no choice but to tap out, and Joe retains the TV title. So the Gates of Agony attacked the other members of the embassy almost immediately. Within a matter of seconds, right? They pounce on Joe in the ring. And here comes Wardlow walking out in his slick blue suit to chase the heels off and save the day. But as he's standing in the ring and he's staring at the bad guys outside the ring, here comes Powerhouse Hobbs, who comes from out of nowhere. He sneaks up behind him and he takes down Wardlow with a spine buster. And he picks up the TNT Championship and he poses with the title to close out the show. Throwing Hobbs out there at the end made me very happy. I can't say that this match made me all that happy, although, look, it's always nice to see Brian Cage on TV because we never see him on TV. And it's nice to see Samoa Joe on TV because we went a few months. He was doing TV stuff. He had a TV role or whatever. We didn't get to see him. So I like that we at least got to see these guys, but, you know, some of the Ring of Honor stuff I just can't get into. I'm kind of into the Jericho storyline, although tonight it hit a real speed bump for me, I think. But the Ring of Honor stuff, and I know why Tony Khan is doing it. He's trying to keep it out in the public eye. He's trying to keep a spotlight on Ring of Honor as much as he can, and just a little bit longer with the hope that they're going to have weekly, either television, streaming, or whatever. They're going to have a weekly show of some kind in 2023. That's what he expects. He's expecting a weekly Ring of Honor show early, sometime in 2023. Does that mean January? Does that mean April? We don't know. But you're throwing out these Ring of Honor matches, and it's just hard to get into it. This is an AEW show. And it's one thing if you want Rampage to basically be the de facto Ring of Honor show, which is what it is at this point, every single fucking week. But some of the other Ring of Honor stuff here on this show, whatever, you know, Jericho isn't doing, is just kind of thrown out there, you know, on occasion where, all right, It's just hard to, it's hard to get into. But seeing Hobbs out there at the very end of the show standing tall, that put a smile on my face because I am a fan of Powerhouse Hobbs, and I'm happy that it looks like he's going to have a spot on the Full Gear card. Should be Wardlow and Powerhouse Hobbs for the TNT Championship at Full Gear, although there is still time to add a third person to that match if they wanted to. I'm not saying they have to. But if they wanted to add Ricky Starks to the match, because Ricky Starks is the one who beat Powerhouse Hobbs when they had their Lights Out match at Grand Slam. Ricky Starks hasn't been seen. Ricky Starks had a match the following week after that big win over Powerhouse Hobbs in the main event on Rampage, that big unsanctioned match. The following week on Dynamite, he had a match I think that went less than 60 seconds. Since then, he's had one match on AEW Dark. I believe one match. That's it. We have not seen Ricky Starks. So as far as I know, he's not hurt, anything like that. We have not seen Ricky Starks since. And it just, it gets on my fucking nerves because I was in the building for that match. Now, I was half asleep for it because it was, you know, 12:30 in the morning and I had a mile and a half walk back to our car. Thank you, Arthur Ashe. But he got this great win, right? This great big win over Powerhouse Hobbs in the main event of the show. This was his crowning moment, the biggest match of his career up to this point. Ride that wave of momentum, right? Come up with something for this guy to do. He doesn't have to wrestle for a championship, but just give him something to do. God knows you got plenty of people on the roster that you could put him with. You have an overflow of people. We haven't seen him since. Now, if he is hurt, which again, I don't believe he is, but if he is hurt, it sure would be nice to know. But of course, AEW is so secretive about all this stuff. But if he's healthy and they're just not using him, what a wasted opportunity coming out of that match. What is it going to mean? Now, Ricky will be okay because Ricky Starks is over. Ricky Starks is going to be just fine. But it goes to a larger problem, I think, just with the, you know, with the booking in general. It just doesn't do people any favors when you feature them in a prominent way and you don't follow up on it. It doesn't do them any good. It's definitely not doing Ricky Starks any good. All Ricky Starks has been doing is posting cryptic tweets and then deleting them. He did another one about a week or two ago. People were asking him, are you okay? Where are you? And I think he posted, I'm okay. And then he deleted the tweet. I don't know why they do that. If you're going to tweet something, stand behind it. He deletes the tweets. Well, I'll tell you what, at least he's keeping busy by doing something, because he's certainly not keeping busy on TV. But again, it just, you know, when I watch a show like this tonight, and here I am talking about Ricky Starks, where is he, and how come he's not featured on this show? It's nice to see Hobbs, but, you know, where's Ricky? And I'm watching a show here where you can't find the time to dedicate to someone like Ricky Starks, who is a young star on the rise, or should be a young star on the rise in this company. But you can find time for 55-year-old Jeff Jarrett on this show. You're going to tell me there isn't something wrong with that? Yeah, I mean, Jarrett may not be featured in a prominent way. Maybe they'll find a good role for him. You can find time for Jeff Jarrett on this show, but you can't find time for Ricky Starks? Really? You're going to tell me that's not a problem? I thought I was watching AEW. Apparently, I'm watching TNA. Here's a Twitter poll. Ouch. 30% have given this show a thumbs up. I said at the beginning that I didn't think this was a very good show. Just because there's a lot going on, there's a lot of noise, doesn't mean that it is a great show. 30% thumbs up, 29% thumbs in the middle, and 40% of you have given a thumbs down score to tonight's Dynamite. That is not good. I hope Tony Khan is paying attention. That's all I can say. Rampage this Friday has Orange Cassidy against Katsuyori Shibata for the All-Atlantic Championship. Britt Baker and Jamie Hayter are going to be taking on Madison Rayne and Sky Blue. And Iron Mike Tyson is going to be doing commentary. It is a rare live edition of Rampage from Atlantic City, New Jersey. Next Wednesday, it is the Acclaimed and FTR. against Swerve in Our Glory and the Gun Club. That's the only thing announced so far for Dynamite next week. And they did make it official at Full Gear. It will be Toni Storm defending the interim AEW Women's Championship against Jamie Hayter, which that I was very pleased to hear. It seemed pretty obvious after last week, but that's going to be good. That already shoots up the list as one of the matches I am most looking forward to on that show on the 19th. And yeah, we'll probably be doing a smack page, as I used to call it. Double review on Friday night. I'll let you guys know on Twitter. But with Shibata Wrestling on TV, how can we not tune into Rampage on Friday? And then we would go live after Rampage is over. Now, I did mention I had one fun little thing I was going to announce. This is going to be a feature for channel members, so in the next day or two, I would tell you guys to keep an eye out for it. I mentioned a few weeks ago, it was coming up in some of the discourse that we were having here. It might have been during the Super Chat portion. And I mentioned to somebody that I had worked on a wrestling magazine, one of the earliest projects that I, you know, and this is back before I was doing the podcast, but even before I was doing like guest radio spots and different stuff, I put together my own wrestling magazine back in the mid-90s called New Generation Magazine. How original. And I said, if I ever dig any of them out, I would let you guys know. Maybe I'd post pictures or something. Well, I kind of hit the mother load a little earlier today. So this is interesting. This was issue 3 and 4. These are not the original ones. This was the third and fourth issue of the magazine that I found in a pile. It is the full magazine. Each one is several pages. And so what I am planning on doing is I will just shoot a video of me thumbing through these magazines. And I will tell you that it has been a very long time since I have gone through them myself. So I'll just kind of go through them and narrate some stuff, see what's inside. I don't quite know what to expect. And what I'll do is I'll put that video up for channel members in the next day or two. So if you are a channel member on either tier, keep an eye out for that. Again, this will not be posted on the main channel for everyone. It'll just be posted for channel members. A little look at Solid Monster, the early days here, New Generation Magazine. Solid Monster, the magazine editor. So that'll be interesting. Man, that's going back a ways. That is going back, 26 years ago? Holy shit. 26 years ago, and I was still talking about the news even back then. I'm sure there's news and rumors in there. Anyway, keep an eye out for that. And thank you, if you are a channel member, thank you for being a member. All right, let's see what you guys thought about this show. I mean, based on the Twitter poll, I'm almost afraid to ask what you guys thought of the show. Because it didn't look like you thought very highly of it. Deep Delicious Chicken with Flavor sent in a $5 super chat. I have a confession. I have been cheating on AEW with NXT lately. I have been having the Toxic Attraction cocktail special. They put a spell on it. I can't blame you for that. AEW has not been feeling very oosy lately. Groovy Goose, a wild slap nuts appears. Double J, Jeff Jarrett. Groovy Goose also says with the $4.99, at least the AEW roster is not fighting amongst themselves this time. That is a first. Thanks for your straight. Hey, I will say that much. If nothing else, I think JD actually found a way to unite the AEW roster. I think he found a way to bring harmony to the roster. How about that? I didn't think that was possible. All the rumors and all the fighting and all the bullshit. At least now they seem to be all on the same page for once. Dr. Dakota Scorpio, you were not kidding about the missed ending. I kind of feel bad. Also, good to see Slapnuts and TNA Ring of Honor taking over AEW. I told you. I told you the ending to The Mist is very depressing. I warned you. Captain Benji, heard Jericho against Cabana was horrible. It got me thinking. Is Nigel McGuinness challenging for the Ring of Honor world title still a possibility? That is exactly the idea that I pitched the week that Nigel got released. It's entirely up to him. Part of me wonders if, you know, maybe they kind of gave him a wink and said, hey, you know, just lay low. We're going to bring you back once we launch this NXT Europe thing next year. But if he's free and clear, I don't know what his non-compete situation may or may not be. Even if it's just for a one-off, I think to get him in the ring with Chris Jericho for the Ring of Honor world title would be incredible. I would love to see it. Wink the Cosmic Grandma with the 999. The clock is ticking for the acclaim. You can only get so red hot before it dies out. Would a War Joe heel turn on the acclaimed be a good solution to capitalize on everyone's popularity? I don't think turning Joe and Wardlow heel, I don't think that's a good idea at all. Bernard Frederick, $10 super chat. Hey, Bernard, thank you. Says, I find it funny that Road Dogg was practically on his knees begging to be hired by AEW, but people like Billy Gunn and now Jeff Jarrett, the two people he's most connected with, are welcome in AEW's door. What does that tell you? When Tony Khan is willing to hire everybody except the Road Dogg. Tony Khan even brought in Pizza Guy for a few appearances, but he would not bring in Road Dogg. Josiah Ball. What do you think these segments that they're showing with the Elite is going to lead to? It's going to lead to a Trios title match at Full Gear. That's what it's going to lead to. Rizzo, I did bring it back. Joseph Brooks, what has happened to AEW? It's starting to give WCW 2000 vibes. Please, no, God, no. Fallout, CM Punk is still on the cover of the AEW video game. That may be out of their control. I don't know that they're going to be able to... if he's still on the cover of the game, it's probably because they ran out of time and they're not able to make any changes to the game. Now, let me check real quick. I am getting reports about Jeff Jarrett, his official role. We have a news update here. So Tony Khan has announced that Jeff Jarrett is the new AEW Director of Business Development. Tony Khan says, I look forward to expanding the AEW live events calendar in 2023 and in future years with Jeff Jarrett and Raphael Morphy and Mookie Ghana. That's Chris Harrington. And our great AEW team. So let me talk about that. Because first of all, I will tell you, for those who don't know, Raphael Morphy is a rock star. He's... My brief experiences with him many years ago when he wasn't with AEW. I think he was with TNA at the time, and he was even with a soccer team. I think he was with the Cosmos. Great guy. Great asset to the company. I think he works... I don't know how long he's been with AEW, but he's someone who is an asset to whatever company he works for. Bringing in Jarrett to effectively take over the role that he had with WWE... That's effectively what Tony Khan is doing, and it makes me wonder how many live events do they plan on running, because that's the one thing AEW doesn't do. They don't do house shows, and I think a lot of the talent probably find that very appealing, that they don't have this grueling road schedule the way they would have if they went to WWE, so that's interesting. You know, as they expand their event calendar, what does that look like? How many events per month do they plan on running? You know, putting Jarrett in that role is fine. He was getting high marks before Triple H got rid of him. Even though he wasn't in the role for very long, From what I could ascertain, he was getting pretty high marks for it. So I actually think that's smart. My question still remains, though, as far as how much television time they plan on devoting to him. Again, small doses. I have no issue if it's small doses. But that's the key. Doesn't need to be on television every week. You don't want to flood your television show with Jeff Jarrett. If they use him in small doses, he can still get heat. Better than most in wrestling, even at his age, even though he's been around for decades now. There's a right way and a wrong way to use Jeff Jarrett, and I think that that certainly is one positive contribution he can make to AEW, is behind the scenes working in a live events capacity. So that's the update on Jeff Jarrett as far as his official title. But I'll tell you what, this guy just falls into jobs. It's amazing to me. He has bounced around from every promotion, and he'll just, you know, if he falls down, he just finds a way to get right back up. I got to give the guy a lot of credit. He loses one gig, he finds the exact same gig in the other company. It's amazing. Dr. Dakota Scorpio, Sala Monster against Shibata. That's right. I get to wrestle Shibata on Friday for the very first time. I'll try to go easy on him. Magician Sapphire with the $10 super chat says, talking about JD, that Jade Shafir match was genital warts levels of ugly. Dynamite was mid at best, except for the opener, the All Atlantic Championship, and the Ring of Honor TV Championship. Matthew Hutchins, thank you for the $2. What if AEW trades Punk to WWE? Who do they ask? They're not trading Punk to WWE. You don't even have to worry about that question, because he's not going to WWE via trade. And if I'm Triple H, I don't think that's something I need to... I don't think that's something he needs to be stepping into right now. Josiah Ball, thank you for the super chat. Flamethrower Fluff Salisbury with the $5. Jeff Jarrett saw the entrance tunnels and thought that he was back at the Impact Zone in Orlando. I think you're right. I thought I was watching the Impact Zone in Orlando. I said, where am I? Frank 92. AEW was painful to watch. Is it always this bad? This was not one of the better shows in recent weeks. It's not always bad. Tomas, what was Jeff's pitch to Tony to hire him, honestly? Well, I can't confirm this, but from what I understand, I did have somebody tell me that he might have flashed some of that Global Force gold. He's got some gold bars left, though. I think he flashed a couple of gold bars to Tony Khan, and Tony's eyes lit up. And that's how he got Tony Khan to hire him for this job. See, that's why Road Dogg didn't get a job. Road Dogg didn't have the Global Force gold that Jeff Jarrett had. He's got a whole room full of it at home that he couldn't unload. So now Tony Khan owns a couple of gold bars, and he's very happy. Rodimus Prime, missed the show, but I heard that we are getting OC against Shibata for the All-Atlantic title. I am definitely watching on Friday. Rizzo, that's not Sting, that's a picture of Sting. We got Jeff Jarrett back on television, now we got JBL back on television. Shinakuma says, from a $1 to no matter what, still showing love. Thank you, Shit. I appreciate that. Anti-M Bishop, Sala Monster chose violence tonight. I love it. No, Sala Monster chose the truth, which is what Sala Monster always chooses. That's what he chose. Dougie Dizzle, hit the like button so Sala Monster can book a better match than that steaming pile of crap that we got tonight. We are up to... where are we up to? We already broke 500, but let's see if we can hit 600. Make it 600 likes. Dougie Dizzle, though, thank you. Tomas says, just heard that Colt came back. What a dick move. Crazy Casey with the $4 super chat. Hey, Casey, thank you. EJ Slemp, $4.99. Do you think Tony Khan won't turn some of his top guys heel, like Vince never turning Cena heel because of high ratings or merch, even if they're stale? I think Tony Khan would be less afraid to make a move if he felt like creatively it would be the move to make. Or if the talent went to him and said, look, I would like to go heel, I would like to go babyface, I think it would make sense. I think that Tony Khan would be more receptive to that. I don't think he would be as stubborn and stuck in his ways the way that Vince McMahon was. The Sky Genie channel, I think Jericho and Claudio is being saved for Final Battle, where I think Claudio regains the title to lead into the third match on Ring of Honor's first television back. So you are just long-term booking this thing out. You could be right about that. It might not be Full Gear. It might be Final Battle. Still doesn't mean that they couldn't figure out a way to make it plausible why he wouldn't be the one to come out and challenge Jericho tonight. And there's the perfect super chat right there. Look at that. This orange imposter. Omar. Hey, Omar, with the $10 super chat. What's going on, Omar? Road Dogg kept begging Tony Khan for a job, and yet the latter ignored him, but hires Dogg's two best friends. But seriously, it is 2022. Why is Double J on my TV? I really miss pandemic-era AEW. Bob the Builder wanted to know your opinion on if there is a way, if there is way too much Ring of Honor on TV. The reason why Moxley was on second is because Tony, Ring of Honor is more important to him. There's too much for my liking, yes. I know why he's doing it, but yes, there's too much for my liking. There's so much AEW talent that is not featured on these shows. And part of the problem and part of the reason why is this focus on Ring of Honor, because he bought it, didn't know what he was going to do with it. Tony Khan did not have a plan for Ring of Honor when he bought it. He said so himself. He had a very small window, and if he didn't act when he did, he knew that WWE would swoop in and just buy it, pick the bones, throw the events up on Peacock, and that would have been the end of Ring of Honor. So he bought it. You know, it's like shoot now and you know, figure out the situation later on. Shoot first and then you'll figure it out. That's basically what he did with Ring of Honor. So he's kind of making it up as he goes along here. I know he's waiting to get that weekly show, but, you know, all this Ring of Honor stuff is at the expense of other AEW talent that isn't being featured, whether it's a Ricky Starks, whether it's a Miro, or take your pick, right? There's other people on the roster, too, who I'm not even thinking of anymore because we just never see them. But, like, Miro would be one of the bigger names, I would say, that we don't get to see at all. Starks isn't quite on his level yet, although he'll get there. But it's just, people aren't just, they're not into it, you know? And then you have Ring of Honor fans. You know, Beowulf brings up a good point. You have diehard, hardcore Ring of Honor fans who look at this and go, this isn't Ring of Honor. It's Ring of Honor in name only, right? You know, there's some fans like that out there too who don't even look at this as Ring of Honor. Even Ring of Honor fans in some cases are probably not into what's going on. EJ Slemp, my date I told you about last week was tonight. It went well, and she's sweet. I'm just getting back out there and doing what Solomonster would do. What was my advice to you? I think I told you just be yourself, right? I don't even remember what advice I gave. Whatever I told you, just keep doing. You'll be fine. I'm glad it went well. Oven Heart with the $5 super chat. Why is Vince Russo better than Bret Hart? And he has a little smiley at the end. I'm glad you put the smiley in there. Otherwise, I would have said that you've got some sort of mental health problem going on here. Hyru, buy or sell on the better defeated look. Marina Shafir tonight or Enzo Amore's face after getting destroyed by the 205 Live roster? Shafir had that look on her face like she just knew, like, what am I even doing? That's about as defeated a look as you will find on a person's face. Even she knew that this was shit. Even she knew that this was shit. I got news for you. Jade knew it too. Everybody in that segment knew it. Bob the Builder, do you believe Jericho feuds overstay their welcome? Jericho tends to want to think longer term, so he drags things out. Do some of them overstay their welcome? Yes, and then others don't. His feud with Shawn Michaels back in 2008 went for months, right? 4, 5, 6 months, something like that. That didn't overstay its welcome. Jericho had a feud with Bryan Danielson, right? That was going on for longer, I think, just because Bryan was out with the concussion. It kind of dragged things out a little bit longer. I didn't mind that. I didn't mind getting Jericho and Danielson together. It doesn't bother me. Bob the Builder, do you know Miro's whereabouts? I am concerned. All I know is that he's alive. He's alive, and I don't think it'll help his cause that Lana did an interview recently and said that Tony Khan has his favorites. That was her response to why we're not seeing Miro on AEW television. Tony Khan has his favorites that he likes. That doesn't sound very good. Metal Rules with the $20 super chat. WWF alternate theory. Alternate history, not theory. The Red Rooster takes the Gobbledygooker under his wing and they form the greatest tag team in history called Poultry in Motion. The Red Rooster and the Gobbledygooker as a tag team. That is a foul idea. We got Mr. Backshots over here. If Starks left, him and Melo and Montez would be money. I kind of hope Ricky Starks does go to WWE. I really do. I wouldn't have said that under Vince McMahon, but I think under Triple H, he'd get a fair shot. Hey, Trey Kwan, thank you for the sub. Welcome to the channel. Hi. Louie. Waldo would be easier to find than Miro. I think you're right. Ken F. Rumbleverse for Sound Off Gamer. It's free to play, brawling, wrestling inspired game. 40 man free for all in a city. Rumbleverse? I'll have to look into that. Send me an email. Be calm, see clearly. JD is cool. He just words things wrong sometimes, but this show and the women's division is a problem. Fight me. Be calm. Thank you. Appreciate the kind words. Rizzo, isn't that what hurt WCW back in the day when they started doing live events? I know a lot of the issues talent had at WWE was their schedule. And the schedule is better now than it used to be. But it's still, you know, it's not an easy schedule. I don't think Tony Khan is going to have a WWE schedule, but, you know, to start getting on the road, I'll tell you what, you know, for the wrestlers who aren't really getting many reps working on TV, and for some of the younger talent who just need more experience, I think it's a great idea. Having some events throughout the month doesn't have to be a large number of them. I also think AEW needs to get out west more often. They need to really, and I'm not just talking Vegas for Double or Nothing. You know, they had their California debut in June. They're going back to California again in a few months. But they should get out west. You know, the west, the Midwest, like, get further out west more often. They only first went to Canada. Hopefully we'll see them up there more often in the future. But, you know, I feel like they've been in their comfort zone out east now for so long, they have to start to migrate out west and break into new markets as well. The problem is right now their live, well, not live events, but their ticket sales are very soft compared to what they were even a year ago. And that's a real problem that has to be watched heading into the new year. The ticket sale, like, they're going back into a market where, let's say, the first time they were there, they sold 5,000 or 6,000 tickets. They go back into that market, they could barely sell 3. And that's not universal. I mean, you know, Full Gear is probably sold out by now, but You look at those ticket numbers like in The Observer, and it's a problem. You know, it's a real problem that Tony Khan is facing heading into the new year. He's got to figure out a way to, you know, boost those numbers. You know, but he's got Jeff Jarrett. Jarrett can actually be very helpful, but not as a talent. Behind the scenes, I think he might be able to help him out on that end. King Bling Blah, thoughts on Crown Jewel's possible cancellation? Crown Jewel is not going to be canceled. Unless, you know, God forbid, there is some kind of attack between now and then, Crown Jewel is not going to be canceled. There was a Survivor Series event a few years ago, and there was, a threat from Al-Qaeda about blowing up a soft target. I think it might have been in the city that WWE was in. If that didn't stop them, then this isn't going to stop them. Party Up Gaming. Buy or sell on Chris Hero replacing Wheeler Yuta in the Blackpool Combat Club. No, I have no interest in that. Magician Sapphire. To be honest, Tony Khan needs to dial back on the Blackpool Combat Club JAS segments and give more time to Starks, Miro, etc. Have DT defend the trios belts and give more TLC to the women. I agree. Groovy Goose says Jeff sang With My Baby Tonight for Tony Khan and got the gig. Take your pick. I think he gave him Global Force Gold. But maybe you're right. Maybe he serenaded him with My Baby Tonight. Tony Khan kicked back with a White Claw, tapping his toe. Maybe. Maybe it was the song that did it. Liquid Sharingan. What? Nick Grosso. Jeff broke 6,000 guitars, never drew a dime, and now he broke 7,000 guitars. And still will not draw a dime. Bliss Fan, TLC means tender loving care. I forgot, there's a whole generation of fans who think it literally means tables, ladders, and chairs. TLC was a thing long before tables, ladders, and chairs. Joseph Brooks, how would you have booked Triple H during the invasion if he had not gotten hurt? I've always thought that Triple H would have been the mole. That he would have sided with the Alliance, but then in the end we would have found out that he was actually with Team WWF. So instead of Kurt Angle, I think it would have been Triple H in that spot. So that's how I think it would have gone. We had the two-man power trip, and it looked like it was heading for a Triple H babyface turn, and he would be the one to feud with Austin. That's the only reason we got Austin against Jericho and Benoit at the King of the Ring that year. I think it would have been Austin and Triple H, but then once the invasion kicked in, I feel like it would have been Triple H in that Kurt Angle spot, so that way he can get the credit for helping Team WWF prevail in the end. Queen Fire Panda, here is my tribute to your vodka fund. I feel like you need it after Dynamite tonight. Main Event Mike, the 499. Colt Cabana won the World Heavyweight Championship a few weeks back for FWF. Posted the video on my channel. So I guess he has been fairly active on the independent scene. I have not been following his recent indie matches, so I was not aware of how active he's been. But apparently Colt Cabana is the FWF champion, whatever FWF is. And Tripod says, did Lisa Evers used to be a wrestler in the 80s? I don't know who that is. Don't know. Tyler with the 499. Hey, Tyler, what's going on? How you doing? With the Vince news today, do you think Vince is permanently retired? I think he's only returning for special appearances and a Hall of Fame induction. I am sure that we have not seen the last of Vince McMahon. Have we seen the last of Vince McMahon in WWE, though, in a executive or creative role? Yes, we have. unless tragedy befalls the entire McMahon family and wipes out Triple H and Stephanie, and I certainly hope that doesn't happen, unless something catastrophic like that were to happen, that's the only way I would see Vince McMahon being brought back in, at least temporarily, to fill his old position. So we have to make sure that Triple H and Stephanie stay healthy, put them in a bubble, make sure nothing happens to them. Otherwise, no. Vince McMahon will not ever be back in his old role. He's done. Head of creative and all that, finished. That's it. That's Triple H's job now. We should all be thankful for that. Even if you don't agree with everything Triple H is doing, the product is in a much better position with having him, or frankly, any new pair of eyes and any new vision, than they were before under Vince McMahon. Vince McMahon is, I'll use the sponge analogy. It's the old sponge. You squeeze it and try to get every fucking last drop out of it that you can until there's just nothing left and it's bone dry. That was what Vince McMahon, creatively speaking, was. He was the bone dry sponge. It was already wrung out. There was nothing left in it. It was time to move on and move on to someone else. Move on to a new sponge. Triple H is the new sponge. The guy you literally used to come to the ring and spit water everywhere. He was like a human sponge. Wring a sponge out, right? Triple H is the sponge. I'll bet Triple H has never been compared to a sponge before. Can't say that anymore. Hey, Louie with the $1.99. Will Sheamus ever win the Intercontinental Championship? Yes, he will. Sheamus will win the Intercontinental Championship at WrestleMania. There is your answer. Retro in the chat says Vince McMahon made wrestling what it is today. And we're all very thankful for it. Now get the hell out of the way. Just because he made wrestling what it is today does not entitle him to a permanent position. The King of Sponges. There you go. That's going to be his new nickname from now on. He's the Sponge King, Triple H. All right, you guys hit the goal tonight. So let's go and do some Be the Booker.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is now time to Be the Booker.
Hey, Eben Hawk, thank you for the sub. Good to have you. Everybody, welcome him to our new family. It is time for Be the Booker, where I am going to book at least one match that I guarantee you will be better than that TBS championship match that we saw tonight. I'm fairly confident in that. I can say that with great confidence. But we'll start out with the men. Be the Booker. We begin with the loose cannon, Brian Pillman. We haven't seen Brian Pillman Jr. on TV in a while. Brian Pillman Jr. was on social media the other day, and he said, I think he was at the airport, and he said that somebody stopped him and said, hey, you look a lot like Brian Pillman Jr. And he said, I know. And I thought to myself, you made that up. You totally made that story up. If anything, they said you look like Brian Pillman, not Brian Pillman Jr. Let's see who Brian Pillman is going to be stepping into the ring with. Oh, I hope it's Stone Cold. I'm pulling for Stone Cold here. Brian Pillman, one-on-one with the former AEW World Champion, Kenny Omega. Kenny Omega and Brian Pillman. Now that is a match that I can get behind. We're already starting out hot. That's going to get a bell. That's going to get two bells. I'm giving it two bells. I don't know that I've ever given a match two bells before. I gave that one two bells. There you go. Now we move on to the ladies. I just updated this today, added a few faces to it. Let's see if we land on any of them. We begin with Nia Jax and her hole. That will never not get a laugh out of me. It looks like she sat down on a fucking railroad spike. My hole! My hole! Nia's hole. You know, one day they're going to give her a whole Hall of Fame induction. They're going to give her a whole Hall of Fame induction. Nia's hole. Hey, you know, Triple H is bringing back all these people. What do you think? You think he'll bring back Nia Jax? Let's hope not. Nia Jax going to go one-on-one with Ivy Nile. No offense, Ivy, but... definitely not a reflection on you, but you didn't stand a chance here. Let's see if we can do better on the tag team front. Big tag team wrestling guy. Love me some tag team wrestling. Let's see who we land on here. We begin with the Rock and Roll Express, one of the greatest teams of all time. Ricky Morton, Robert Gibson, still going strong. Actually, they're in the middle of their retirement tour. Yeah, that was. That was our first buzzer for the month of November. Thank you, Groovy Goose. Rock and Roll Express. We're already in good shape here. Taking on Edge and Christian. Yes! Yes! 2 out of 3, and a very strong 2 out of 3, actually. Edge and Christian against the Rock and Roll Express. Brian Pillman against Kenny Omega. It almost just makes you forget about Nia's hole. We'll pretend that didn't happen. That's a great way to start the month of November. I like that. I like starting November on a high note. Doesn't get much higher than that. I am very high right now. Could not be any higher. Juan says, you sent a super chat before. Did I miss it? Let's see. Nope. No, I didn't. Maybe you're talking about one of the green member ones. Those, I don't catch all of those. If it's a super chat, though, it's not here. I don't see it. I see this one, though. Thank you. Thank you for this one. Thank you, Juan. I did see what you said in the chat, though, about you emailed me, so I'll check my email after. Juan, back again with the $4.99. I would like to say thanks to everybody in the chat and to me for dealing with all of my corneisms. I officially turned 30 as of today. Sign me to a WWE deal. Well, everybody wish Juan a happy birthday. Juan is one of our regulars here in the chat. He's turning the big 3-0. Oh, that was your message? Well, there you go. Well, there you go. So I just read your message. But yes, happy birthday to Juan. I hope it's a great birthday. I hope you have something planned other than wrestling related for your 30th birthday. Whatever you do, don't do what I did on my 30th birthday. That's why I only remember half of it. Well, I'll tell you one thing about November. We have a very busy month ahead. And so I hope that you will join me for all of the streams that are coming up, including this Saturday. Not only are we going to stream after Rampage and SmackDown on Friday night, and that's going to be a late night. By the time I go to bed, it'll be, you know, 3, 3.30 in the morning. And then the next day, less than 12 hours later, is Crown Jewel. So we have Crown Jewel from Riyadh on Saturday. I'll be live after that. Episode 781, 15-year anniversary of the Sound Off on Sunday. And then, of course, we have Full Gear coming up in a few weeks. We have Survivor Series with War Games on the 26th. We have 2 watch-alongs coming up, one next week for Montreal. And then in a few weeks, 20-year anniversary coming up of the very first Elimination Chamber. I haven't watched that match probably since it aired 20 years ago. And we'll get to watch it along together. Triple H suffered a devastating injury in that match. He took a knee right across the trachea from Rob Van Dam, and he finished the match. That's a tough SOB. So, a lot of good shit coming up here in the month of November, including, again, just a quick final plug here for those channel members, and if you are not a member, there is still time to become one. I'll be putting a little video up for some of you guys probably later tomorrow, just going through these magazines, the wrestling magazine that I did. 26 years ago? We'll see what content is in there. This is my earliest foray into any wrestling-related project. I finally found them today, so that'll be a fun little thing for all of our channel members tomorrow. And I think we have covered everything that there is to cover. Again, I was not a huge fan of the show tonight, but they can't all be winners. But again, all the criticism and all the critiques for everything, it comes from a place of me wanting to see these mistakes corrected, or what I perceive to be mistakes. What I think is a mistake, you may not think is a mistake. But there are definitely issues with this show that need to be corrected. It is not a perfect show. We saw that tonight. They had problems in AEW, and I want to see them do better. Because when you have healthy, strong competition, that's good for everybody. And I want to see things go up. I don't want to see them go down. And when things go up, it benefits everybody, including podcasters. So, again, I say it, and it comes from a place of wanting them to do better. And that's what I want. I want them to do better. Have yourselves a good night. Thank you for choosing me for your Dynamite coverage, and I hope you come on back on Friday night. We'll get to do it all over again for SmackDown and most likely Rampage with Shibata. Hey, maybe Mike Tyson will get in the ring and he'll confront Shibata. Never know. I'll see you guys on Friday.